So did you catch the fish?
Yes, I did. It's a striped bass, and I was fishing off Long Island. It's what's called the Shinnecock Inlet, which is off Shinnecock Bay, and the Shinnecock Inlet goes out into the ocean. And the striped bass are one of my favorite fish to catch. They're a beautiful fish. They're a beautiful eating fish, and they are put up a good fight. And they're hard to catch. You can catch a lot of bluefish when you're out there, and they're fun. But the striped bass are there are fewer of them. They're a little more discriminating, and they're harder to catch. So, and plus, with the legal limit on the size, it's hard to catch a fish that's a quote-unquote keeper. So it was a good day.
And they're safe to eat.
They're safe to eat.
That's good. Can I ask you about but I know you want to talk about what's coming up next for you, but just quickly on the anti-cyberbullying law that you signed, do you think that's significantly going to change the culture of kids being bullied?
I think it does. I think this is a relatively new issue for us to grapple with as a society. Not first and foremost as a government, but as a society, and it's challenging. I have three teenage daughters at home, as you know, 17, 17, and 14. So I've been living with this through high school, and the technology gives the kids a sense of power, and it gives them a sense of anonymity. It gives them a little distance. You know, it's almost a little too easy to post. Through the technology, a bad word or a bad expression about someone, and it's amazing to me that the power of the negativity and how it can hurt a young person. So I think this is an evolution for us. I think we have to educate ourselves. I think part of this law is more dialogue and bringing it to the forefront. And part of this law is saying to schools, you are responsible, not primarily responsible and not exclusively responsible, but you are responsible. And this is a phenomenon, and it is critically important to address. And we want it addressed in the schools. We want it recognized. And we want the school to have a course of conduct and a protocol to address it. And part of it is awareness, and part of it is discipline, and part of it is enforcement. And we're not going to tell the schools how to do it, but we're going to tell them that we want it done. And we'll leave it to them to come up with a specific strategy. But they have to have a strategy and a course of action in place.
So is that partly why it's not as punitive? Because you think kids just don't really understand the impact when they do things like this?
Well, there's a second question, Karen, of some people say we should have a criminal offense. That's a different topic, and that's a conversation we have to have. But do you really want to put a 14-year-old in jail for a relatively mild case of bullying? So we did not have criminal sanctions in this law, but it says to the school, we want you to come up with not just a program that educates, but an enforcement program. And some of the schools took the position, well, it's not our responsibility because it doesn't happen on the school yard. It doesn't happen on school premises. That, to me, is an old definition of the schoolyard. Years and years ago, back in the old days when I was in school, there was the concept of the schoolyard. That schoolyard today is in cyberspace. And that schoolyard today is the Facebook page and the Facebook postings and email. And that's the schoolyard. And abuse is going on in the schoolyard and cyberspace, and the schools have to be responsible.
Yeah, boundaries are a lot different. So what are your priorities for the next 6 months? Obviously, when the session ended, there was some unfinished business, decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana, public financing of campaigns kind of got dropped, some other things that lawmakers wanted, like the minimum wage. Are you going to work on those, or are you going to work on things that you don't need the legislature for, or?
Well, let's address both. First, when the legislature ended, there were things that were undone. I think that should always be the case. Because this is a constant process, right? The legislature, the charge to the legislatures are the laws that you can pass that can make this society and make this state a better society and a better state. And the answer should always be yes. It's a continual process of refinement. There were proposals that were made this year that didn't pass because there were people who didn't want to pass them, Karen. You know, minimum wage didn't pass. That's right, because some people didn't want to pass minimum wage.
But,
right?
you don't put yourself in that category.
No, I supported minimum wage. But so there are – it's not that they didn't get to it. It's that we didn't have consensus, right? And so on those issues, the dialogue will continue. But they got a tremendous amount of work actually done.
Well, what about public campaign finance? You had mentioned that in the State of the State. It just sort of dropped off the radar.
No, it didn't. It doesn't. These things don't drop off. There was not a desire to pass it. That's what happened. The legislature did not want to pass campaign finance reform. I put it forth in my State of the State. I had many, many discussions about it. They didn't want to pass it. And it is one of those areas that I think we're going to have to raise the awareness and the political mandate on campaign finance reform, because the politicians have to know if they don't pass campaign finance reform, there's going to be a price to pay with the electorate. And as you know, we all look at the public opinion surveys here. Campaign finance reform hasn't been at the top of the list. I think it should, but I think we're going to have to put it up at the top of the list, because all too often the legislative body responds to what the people want. That means we have to get them talking about campaign finance reform. There are a number of groups that are coming together to do education efforts and advocacy efforts on campaign finance reform. I'm going to be working with them. I think that's very important. Because I think people still don't know enough about it, and it hasn't been urgent enough. I do believe during this presidential season, which threatens a truly excessive exploitation of the campaign finance laws through various means, Citizens United lawsuit, PACs, et cetera, lobbying organizations, I think people are really going to get the sense that the system is out of control. And I think that it can actually help us pass a law on the state basis.
So is that going to be a priority for you? I mean, because isn't that partly your job to get the legislature together, or is your job as governor to push the agenda and figure out a way to get them to agree? You certainly
yes.
have done it on other issues.
Yes. Yes. But when I have the most success, I found, the past 18 months are a barometer. When I have the most success, it's because I generate public opinion. And although they don't teach this in civics courses and government courses, all too often the politicians follow the people and rather than leading the people. And I found success when I generate public opinion, and then the legislature moves. When we passed marriage equality, for example, we generated public opinion, and the people in this state supported marriage equality. And then the legislature acted. The same model here is we have to get the people of the state to demand campaign finance reform, which they are not doing today. And then I think the legislature will follow. And I think I have a role to play in working with other groups to get the word out on campaign finance reform. I plan on doing that, and I think this presidential election may be the bully pulpit for this discussion, because I think you're going to see money coming over the transom with all these groups that where the identification is nebulous. And I think at the end of this presidential cycle, people are going to say enough is enough. We need campaign finance reform.
Speaking of that, Nick Confessori had a story yesterday on the 501(c)s and donors getting around the donor disclosure laws and kind of circumventing the laws with that. The Committee to Save New York that's been associated with some of your agenda is a 501(c). Do you have any discomfort about that, the way that sometimes these groups are kind of being used to maybe get around the election laws and the campaign laws?
Well, there are different laws. They're not getting around the campaign finance laws. The C4s are lobbying organizations, which have for many, many years been recognized as legal entities to advocate, educate on behalf of an issue. So it's another vehicle that is bringing money into the overall discussion of issues and candidates. And in this state, as you know, because of a law that we passed last year, there will be disclosure of C4s.
That's right. Jay Cope is going to be doing that, but in the future, not retroactively. Do you think Community Save New York should disclose retroactively?
Yeah, but Karen, when you say in the future, we are the only state in the nation that will require this disclosure. The only state in the nation. So that is a real feather in our cap, I think. Also,
but they shouldn't have to do it retroactively, you don't think?
Well, the legislature didn't pass a retroactive law, and just as a general rule, retroactive laws are looked down upon because people conduct business under a current set of laws with current expectations, and then you come along in the future and say, well, I'm changing everything, and I know you acted in good faith on a basis, but I'm changing the basis. So I think retroactivity can be precarious. But we'll have full disclosure. It'll be unlike other states. It'll be unlike other forms, like super PACs. The problem is, under the current laws and the federal laws, the law of the land, Citizen United, the courts have made it clear that anonymity in participation in the political discourse is in keeping with the Constitution. That's the fundamental problem, I think, is the Citizens United decision that says that's the law of the land.
Yeah. Are you going to have any events planned or take any specific actions to promote the public financing of campaigns and campaign finance reform? You mentioned the groups, and I think I did read an article about the groups getting together to do this. Is there anything planned in the next month or two?
Yeah, they are planning as we speak, Karen. I think you're going to see the most coordinated and effective communication effort on this issue that you've seen in a long, long time. I'm just trying to think back. When was the last time there was an educational effort of note on campaign finance reform? I can't recall one as we're chatting. So,
well, it's one of those things. Yeah, insiders seem to know all about it, but people, at least supporters, I think, would say people don't always make the connections, right, about what it means when a lot of people are allowed to give unlimited money, right?
That's right. And see, that's the problem. It's not enough for the insiders to know. People, as I like to say. It has to be a topic that the electorate cares about, and the electorate has to express that concern to their politicians. And then you'll see the politicians respond. I know it's supposed to work the other way around, where the political system leads, but sometimes the political system follows. And so the effective strategy is communicate with the people, explain the facts, get them engaged, websites, emails, and then you'll see the legislature move. That's what I've done here for 18 months. I haven't gone to the politicians first. I've gone to the people first, and that's when the system responds.
So the legislative session is over. Would you say the political season has begun?
I think the political season is beginning. We'll have primaries,
Yes.
And then a general election in November.
And so you know what I'm getting at. Are you going to make any endorsements for state senate?
I will make endorsements of candidates as the races shape up, Karen.
They're shaping up now, so feel free.
Yeah, well, I don't have anything. I just made some congressional endorsements a couple of weeks ago for the congressional races that were coming. But for me, I want to know what an individual's position is on these questions that we're talking about, what the issues are in the race, what the track record is. And I'll make a decision on a case-by-case basis. depending on the facts and the merits in a particular case.
Do you think overall, though, the Senate's been better led by Republicans than Democrats? I mean, who would you prefer to see in power?
You know, I don't think it works that way. I wasn't here when the Democrats were in power, obviously. During that period of time, it didn't work well, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I think you were close enough to probably figure that out, yes, that they didn't have a very good track record.
Yeah, but, you know, depending on who you talk to, they'll give different reasons for why it didn't work, you know, and you have the Assembly, you have the Senate, and you have the executive, the governor. So there's all different theories. I think from my point of view, Karen, I pride myself on trying to work with anyone and everyone and putting politics aside. And I think we did that well the past 18 months. And if someone is willing to work with me, I'm willing to work with them. And I try to find the commonality and try to find ways to get to yes. And I treat people with respect. And I don't start with a political bias. We've seen gridlock. We've seen gridlock in Albany. We've seen dysfunction in Albany. We've seen gridlock in Washington. You know, to me, it's about finding ways to work together. It's easy enough to find ways to fight.
Just one last question I had on hydrofracking. I think you said a couple of weeks ago that your policy on it would be out shortly. Will it be limiting fracking at first to areas in the southern tier communities that want fracking? Is that how it's going to happen?
You know, I think, Karen, we should expect DEC to conclude later this summer. I have not pushed DEC to expedite any decision. I want a timely decision, but I want a thorough decision. And they have thousands of comments, as you know, and they're working their way through the comments. So I know they're working very hard, but I want them to do it on a professional timetable and not a political timetable. Mm-hmm. And then let's see what they come up with and what their report says, and then we'll take it from there.
But do you think that would be a good way to approach it? Because there's so much controversy about it, and some communities don't want it and others do. Let the communities that want it be able to begin it and see how it goes.
Well, I think it's inarguable, but that one should take into consideration home rule. And if you have communities that have an expressed desire to proceed, I think that should be taken into consideration. If you decide to go down this road at all, and obviously if a community says they oppose it, that should be taken into consideration. But the first fork in the road, staying with the road metaphor, is the state proceeding down this path, and on that we have to wait for the DEC.
So you're not saying whether that's going to happen or not.
Short answer is, I don't want to get ahead of the DEC. I've said all along, let the decision be made on the science and the facts, and that's what DEC is considering.
Well, thanks for answering my questions, but you didn't get your topics in. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we haven't covered?
No,
that's important for people to know, people of the state to know, listeners to know.
I think you covered everything.
Well, thank you very much for calling. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for talking to me, Karen.
Thanks. All right.
Thanks.
Bye.